Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of Tribal Council. I am one of your hosts, Chris, and on the other end of the Subway Fresh Take hotline here, we've got Ralph.
With a brand new headset.
You don't quite sound like you're calling in from the International Space Station or anything. Of course, then again, I didn't notice it last time either, so who knows? Maybe it'll end up sounding like you're on Mars anyway. We've got episode 2 to discuss, and shall we dive right in?
I really kind of dug the last little remnants of Semhar that we got. The little spoken word she put herself to sleep with, that was her lullaby, I enjoyed.
I am at this point convinced she came on Survivor to launch a career. I don't know what career that is she thinks she's going to launch, but I mean, she's just a little too ready to drop the verse at any given moment.
There were a couple of players on the season who Burnett funneled to Survivor from other shows.
That's true. Yeah, there were a couple of auditions from Amazing Race.
I think Semhar came in for, like...
She might have been Amazing Race also.
No, I think she came in for, like, Apprentice.
Really?
Yeah, and here's the best one. Edna came in for Shark Tank. That's the best. I love that show.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I do remember reading that, actually.
She wanted to hawk some sort of, like, lotion or something.
Which that actually almost, I mean, it doesn't make sense in that, it's not that I picture her as some sort of budding entrepreneur, but as we see later on, Edna is an insanely bad liar.
Yes, she is.
and so it's worth pointing out.
And
she didn't ask for this show. This show was thrust upon her.
Terrible at fashioning a makeshift hat.
Terrible. That's the one thing that I think she is cut out for on this show is, like, making do with what you got. I mean...
Like, is that hat made of tree mail? Is that what it's made of?
I would assume that's tree mail. and if you ask me, that's the most inventive use of tree mail we've seen in 23 seasons.
Until someone uses it as, like, a tank top and makes a tree mail tank top. A tube top.
I'll be impressed if you can pull off a tank top. That would have to be
a little strappy number.
One heck of a stanza for tree mail if you're able to wrap it around into a two top. That or you've been on the island a little too long.
And the girl would have to be like a size -0, like -4.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You've been on the island so long that you've wasted away to the point where we can wrap a 4-inch wide piece of paper around you.
It's a kid's medium.
Right, yeah, it doesn't bode well. It does not bode well for the health of that survivor. But yeah, Semhar, I mean, I will not be sad when she is gone.
Nope.
I know you will be, because you at least your eyes will be.
Yeah, no, she's not hard on the eyes for me.
But she is unimpressive to me at every turn, even with the spoken word stuff, just because it feels... I don't know, canned or something. The other opener for the episode is Cochran coming back, and I don't know, my first thought was, Cochran, you've already done a lot of talking in the at Tribal Council. You need to shut up because you're coming off really weak.
Yeah, and we got much less of him this week, which is good.
Yeah.
According to, like, Probst, apparently he just went on for, like, over an hour at Tribal about, like, every single thing.
According to Probst, did you read
Dalton.
A Probst blog?
Ross.
Yeah, Dalton Ross is the one I read, yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, how do we get that gig? He was out there for the first few days of shooting?
I think it was probably about 15 to 18 seasons before Dalton Ross started making the trek out there. So, we, you know, maybe in about 7 or 8 years...
So Survivor season 36.
Yeah.
We can count on getting the invite out there.
Yeah.
Of course, by then I plan to have been on the show already anyway, so
yes.
I mean
that won't have been your first trip to the island.
Right. Well, we'll get to it later, but I feel like this was the season I was supposed to be on because the two puzzle challenges we've seen so far are right in my wheelhouse.
Let's save it for that segment.
All right, yeah. We do too much of that. We'll get there.
I know.
Anyway,
Can I throw out a topic?
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, one, Jeff started calling them Savaii.
Did he really?
I heard it at the challenge.
I didn't notice that, but yes. Wow, that's funny. Maybe it was because when he did it, I was probably turning to Stacy to say, I think they should be called Savaii. So I might have actually drowned him out.
Over at Savaii, Oz and Keith are sitting at the fire post-tribal talking about what they want to do, and they're complimenting Jim, and they're going to form a power trio, and I think it's a really good idea. And then Jim expands on it later and creates the 3+2 plan, which is great.
Yes.
I think 3+2 is something that more people need to be mindful of, that you can create an alliance of 5, but you better know that you're in the 3.
Well, yeah. I mean, I got to give – it's Keith, that's the other guy's name?
Keith.
Is that right?
Ozzy, Jim, yeah.
Yeah. So I got to give Keith credit because – I feel like right now he's playing the fiddle very nicely. You know, he's playing Jim very nicely. You know, he's picked up on that Jim is a bit of a power hungry kind of guy, and so he's going to let him feel like he's running the show.
Yeah.
And just be on, you know, high alert about Jim, knowing that, like, you know, he is a power hungry guy, so he needs to make sure that any moves he makes, meaning Keith, any moves Keith makes need to be very covert in order to be able, in order to execute them properly. Otherwise, power hungry Jim will make an attempt to snuff that.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately I liked his poker analogy. I know you're a big fan too. That, like, you gotta, like, pile up chips early on so you have those things going for you later, that everything you do along the way adds up in the end to being an advantage.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, this is sort of, to play the analogy a little further, this is, you know, pick up the small pots so that you've got enough chips when the big pot comes.
He makes another analogy to being at the cool kids table, and I think that is so strong of a analogy, just because the first couple, like the first 6 days, the first two tribals, it's all about, are you at the cool kids table? And if you're not, I'm sorry, you're gone.
Yeah, no, you're definitely right about that. Yeah, I completely agree, and it's not looking great for my horse, Papa Bear.
No.
But on the other hand, you know, as long as they keep winning immunity, they've won one in a row. As long as they keep winning immunity, we don't have to worry about it. And I'm pretty sure
he's third on the list behind Cochran and Dawn. So
exactly, yeah. So he's you know, if they can go into a 10-man merge dominating, then he'll make the merge. Which we all know that's a key turning point, a key threshold to make it past. At which point, sort of anything can happen afterwards. So Ozzy finds the idol.
Yeah.
after which CBS stops shooting and then just re-airs episodes 3 through 15 of Survivor Redemption Island, right? I mean, we have an absolute repeat of last season here. The favored of the two returners finds the hidden immunity idol. The less favored of the two returners is not in the good graces with his tribe. You know, we've got a Hans on the show. I mean, this is Survivor Redemption Island here. Literally, because they're doing Redemption Island
as
well.
Yeah, I didn't see that angle, but I completely see what you're talking about. And in my notes, I wrote down that and before he finds it, I typed out, it would be too much of an advantage if it was in the trees. And what do you know? It was in the trees. Like, way up in the trees.
But remember that in theory, you weren't going to be looking for the hidden immunity idol just on general search. You were going to be looking for the hidden immunity idol with a clue that told you, you know, you're looking up there.
If you're going to plant it without clues and put it in a tree, who's going to be up in trees? Come on.
Well, I mean, I'll agree with you on that, but, I mean, I remember thinking during the shot, yeah, it's a little bit to Ozzy's advantage that's up there, but at the same time, it's not like, I mean, that little maze of branches and limbs, etc., is not remotely the most complex that we've ever seen Ozzy climb. Like, you know, any any mildly nimble individual would be able to scale that little makeshift ladder of branches. It's not like he went straight up a totem pole and retrieved it, you know, from the top of a totem pole, just sort of resting up there or something.
I like it when it's buried and, like, you need the clue. Like, that, they really should have done that. They should have buried it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they really, I mean, ultimately, they really need to rethink this entire thing here. Survivor is in, is really starting to tread on paths that have already been blazed here, and getting to the point where it's becoming very formulaic. I mean, we're, once again, we see the 3-3 split in votes, and, you know, it we saw that last season there were split votes, like the first three votes last season.
Yeah.
I mean, that sort of thing basically renders the Hidden Immunity Idol moot, unless someone can just survive that by luck, by being on the right side of an alliance, holding on to the idol, and then taking it till later. And as we saw last season, it never was even played.
Gives us great moments like Tyson.
It was played. Sorry.
It gives us, the split vote thing gives us great moments like Tyson blowing up his own existence in the game.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was fantastic. But, I mean, that was also due to Russell. The contributing factors there, Russell is way more of a contributing factor than the general existence and need for split votes. You know,
having to split votes because of Immunity Idol, I think also, you know, dilutes the power of an alliance, just because there is more that can go wrong. It's more intrigue going into tribal councils than without it.
See it as a benefit?
I understand your point about there being retreads and that, like, there's obviously a very clear strategy in place to, like, flush out idols, and that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think everyone should have those strategies in hand, like, when they go into the game. So, but again, I think it leaves it open for someone to go in and make a play, whereas if it's 6-3 with no need for a split, then there's no room for a play.
Yeah, I feel like we're hitting the rut that was the beginning of Survivor Africa, which was season 3, when everybody had seen 2 seasons of Survivor. They had figured out that it's all about alliances, and all you had to do was make sure you ended up in a strong alliance and then stay faithful to it, and then you could ride that out. And it was going to be a real boring season, and the producers switched things up, I think it was 3 or 4 episodes into the season, forcing everybody to swap tribes, and then, you know, and suddenly Survivor reinvented itself. And I think we're at a turning point, more or less this season, next season, where if they don't change things up, this show is going to start to get seriously formulated.
Don't you think that's why they're banking on Redemption Island?
I mean, yeah, but I mean, the thing that I think would be really interesting, and you have to get totally lucky for it to happen, although they got fairly lucky last season with the Matt storyline, but the thing I think could be really interesting is if somebody got voted off with the idol, took it with them to Redemption Island and didn't tell anybody, and either A, brings it back, or B, I mean, what I would do is I would leave it at Redemption Island, and then when we go to the challenges, you know, I would tell everybody who came to Redemption Island, I'd be like, I have the idol, it's here. If I lose, this is where it is, you take it back into the game, you know? Like, that would be that's a very interesting thing that could happen, I think. But it's going to take, you know, a blunder and some luck to even end up in that situation.
Right.
So, you know, right. You'd almost have to plant an idol on Redemption Island just to get it to happen.
Let's skip over to Upolu before we get to the challenge.
Yes. I do want to talk about them. Specifically, I'm guessing what you're getting at is Brandon making the decision to shed some weight from his conscience. And reveal to Coach that he's a Hans.
All I'm learning is that Brandon is a 19-year-old kid who has no idea what to do. That's what I'm learning.
Yeah, he's not nearly as experienced as he likes to project. Coach's reaction was absolutely fantastic. I mean, the knees buckling as he's walking. I mean, acting or not, that was great.
I think Coach is completely genuine. I think it's completely genuine.
Oh, yeah.
So every reaction from him, I think, is totally legit, and it was perfect. It was like, how did I get – I'm back in the game, and I'm back with a Hans. Like, how did I get myself in this mess? And I trusted
and,
him.
Yeah, and on and top of it, I'm in an alliance with him.
Right.
Yeah. Pretty – I mean, that was pretty good. What do you think about Brandon's choice there to tell him?
It only reflects to me that he's a 19-year-old kid who doesn't know how to play this social game. He's obviously battling his desire to be a good kid with his past of being, you know, a Hans. And it's killing him. And you know, I think him carrying a machete and talking Bible, I think, is the ultimate in juxtaposition that is Brandon. Like, he's got the machete in one hand. He's quoting the Bible with his mouth. Like, it's two different images.
But I mean, more in terms of general game strategy. What do you think of it? Not necessarily as it's
He's going to be seen as untrustworthy. He's going to be seen as untrustworthy. He's going to be seen as someone who's unstable. Like, I wouldn't trust him. Not in a heartbeat. Like, never. Like, ever. So,
yeah.
It's not happening for him.
I mean, among the if there were three different game plans, one was tell everybody who I am, or actually, I guess four. There's tell everybody who I am, own up to it, be completely honest. There's hide it completely, which he was employing until earlier tonight. There's the one that I suggested, which was yes, say yes, that's my last name, but deny that we are actually related and just be like, you know, oh yeah, I get that question all the time or whatever. And then there's the plan that he decided to go with. I think of those four plans, his plan is at the bottom of the rankings there.
Yeah.
You know, telling select individuals from the tribe or even more particularly within your own alliance, that's not a good recipe.
What pressure was he on to tell? Like, what was pressing on his mind to say I've got
to It's his
say.
Own pressure. It's his own, you know... it's his own, I found the new way, you know, through God here, and, you know, he doesn't like being in an alliance with somebody that he's lying to, in particular, I think, because of the fact that, you know, Coach, of all the people in his alliance, Coach is the one person who would be affected by this information, whereas the others... You know, certainly they might be affected, but it would be negligible compared to the way Coach might be affected by this information. I think ultimately, you know, if you're going to go with the plan of I'm going to tell some people and not tell others, Coach was the guy to pick in terms of he'll keep that secret, I think. And, you know, there's a degree to which this really is going to bring you into his good graces. But... I don't know.
My personal strategy, if I'm him, is like, yeah, I'm his nephew. CBS brought me in to redeem his name. I'm gonna do the best I can and just be honest. Like, look, I'm gonna try to redeem the name, and that's it. Period. I'd be like, oh, that's a really refreshing, you know, idea coming from my hands. Mm. And hopefully they believe you, and that's it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, moving on. Let's. Anything else before the immunity challenge?
No, we're good.
Yeah, I agree. The immunity challenge really didn't have a whole lot to talk about, I don't feel like. The one thing I did notice right away was Cochran not being on the puzzle right after we had heard Ozzy and Keith talking about how, well, he'll probably be good on the puzzles.
Right.
Of course, as
I
believe
we... But the puzzle involved brute strength.
Well, right. And so there was the question of, is he good enough at puzzles that it's worthwhile to take a one-man disadvantage in strength, but an advantage in terms of, like, then he just looks at the puzzle from above and actually can direct traffic.
Clearly it didn't matter.
Clearly it did not matter, yes. I mean, obviously this is a question asked at the beginning of the challenge, not at the end.
Yeah. From the looks of it, it looks like Savai'i did the ideal solution. Like, they didn't have a single bad move. Their first move was right, and every single move after that seemed right.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it was a—I call this the rush hour puzzle. Rush hour is like that game where you have
the traffic or blocks, all those puzzles on.
So you
got
like move blocks around,
and stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, just from watching their solution, like, from the very first move.
Oh, right. There were no wasted moves.
There were no wasted moves. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I see what you're saying. I thought you meant strategically in terms of placing people or something like that.
No, I'm just saying in terms of handling that particular puzzle, they had an ideal solution, and it was fun to watch. I couldn't believe how – I liked the rewind. I was like, how did they get that far that fast? And everything they did seemed to make sense, I had no idea what Blue was doing.
Yeah, it was actually a pretty straightforward puzzle. I mean, yeah. I would argue that it's actually distinctly easier than most traffic or what do you call them, road jam or whatever, roadblock type puzzles, because you could slide pieces in multiple directions, not just up, down, or left, right, but both up, down, and left, right.
Yes, like...
Go ahead.
No, just that, like, you know, I'm thinking, like, in Rush Hour, like, buses only go side to side. They can't go sideways. Like the wide direction of the bus, it can't go.
We should start a Rush Hour podcast, breaking down the finer the finer strategies in working your way out.
Rewinding
of
a little bit,
a Rush
Hour
jam.
I thought Upolu's job of unwinding the braid was so amazing. Like, the girls were like,
oh, it was impressive. That was like Cirque du Soleil right there.
Yeah, it was great.
I mean, the only thing they were missing was one of them actually, like, with their feet on the pole walking around it or something.
Or like a Chinese acrobat.
Exactly. And it looked like, I mean, I don't know, it was tough to pick up on, but it looked like there might have been a pattern to it, and maybe they figured out the pattern and they knew just
I think the pattern
exactly
was over, under, over, under. I think that was it. They just had to go over, under.
So you were so since you had two people going in each direction, you were always going over the same person and under the same person.
Yeah.
If that's the pattern, then, you know, once you identify that, it doesn't take long.
But it was impressive.
It was impressive, and it was pretty sad that they weren't able to make it pay off in the puzzle. I mean, I would argue that their group of four guys on the puzzle was probably stronger collectively than the four guys on Savai'i, right? I mean, I think each of the guys from Upolu is stronger than Papa Bear, probably.
I don't know ultimately if that made a difference, because, again, Blue was not on the ideal solution and Red was, so...
Yeah, that's true, yeah. When you have a wasted move or two, it doesn't take long for that to catch up to you.
Doesn't make a difference.
So the big comeback was a big deal.
We have a lot to talk about.
What's that?
I feel like we have a lot to talk about here. Brandon's got some issues, man.
Oh, like, yeah. That's my big note coming back from immunity and before we head to tribal, is, you know, the is just doing a quick breakdown. Brandon versus Russell Hance. You know, it's really striking to me that, like, he has a lot of there are a lot of ways in which he is very similar to Russell. And there are a lot of ways in which he is very different from Russell, and it's striking to me. I mean, you know, the similarities are the obvious one. When he gets dialed in on a target, like, he has blinders on, and that is the only person he is worried getting off of the island.
And contrary to that, unlike his uncle, he tries to vote the hotties out first instead of keeping them around as his alliance.
Right, and that's the thing. That's the difference, and the thing that he gets credit for, I think, is he recognizes. I mean, this comparison of Michaela to Parvati is very apt, I think. I mean, you disagree?
I disagree.
I mean, I mean, I don't think we've seen it yet. I mean, we haven't seen
that's
any
why
sort
I disagree.
Of wily
I haven't
ways.
Seen it.
Okay,
you haven't seen it.
Okay, but in terms of she otherwise appears to be socially in the good graces of the rest of her tribe, and
she's on the outs of that alliance. She's not in the alliance of six.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about that. Although, yeah, okay, that's okay. Good point. Fair. I guess I was just sort of letting her profession precede her.
Yeah. No, being a lingerie football player is very analogous to being a foxy boxer, but, you know, that's...
Is that what Parvati was?
She's
like
a foxy boxer.
A foxy? Is that really what they're called?
It's called foxy boxing. So if she's a is female it? Boxer, oh. then that's a foxy boxer.
Okay, if you say so.
Anyway, so like, I think,
but I mean,
think,
but athletically, I think she's very strong.
Because, like, okay, but like, she's trying. She's not trying to lay low. And like, the thing that gets me is like, Brandon's like, she's got every girl in this. She's got every guy in this camp wrapped around her finger, but me. No, that's like the opposite. She's got you wrapped around her finger, and everyone else
well,
can care less. Like,
she's
like,
definitely got him twisted. I don't know about
Albert's,
wrapped around
Albert's
his finger,
not,
but
Albert's not paying her no mind. Clearly, coach that's is not true. Paying her any mind. Rick that's is like true. Too busy worrying about his cows back home. Like, no one is worried about Michaela.
The other interesting difference between Brandon and Russell is the internal conflict. I mean, obviously, we see the internal conflict with Brandon, and maybe it does affect Russell. Who knows? And he just never showed it. I doubt it, though.
Now,
but Brandon...
straight desire to win. That's it. At all
costs. Oh, exactly. And in his mind, that was, you know, the end justifies the means, even though the end didn't actually end up being the end.
And for Brandon, it's all means.
Yeah, and it's interesting because he's... Now that we've seen another episode, it really does seem like this is genuine and not so much a casting storyline thrust upon him of, you know, redeeming the name and et cetera.
It's also self-redemption. He's trying to redeem himself. Like, he feels like he has this past where he made bad choices, and he's trying to turn this page. He's a married man now. He doesn't want to, like, have temptation around, and he's, like, kind of hiding behind... you know, his biblical quotes, but, like, deep down, like, he's obviously terrified that he's going to, like, let his crazy out.
Well, and I mean, you got to give Coach credit. I mean, as much as the guy, you know, loves to get heavily philosophical, I mean, he hit the nail on the head with Brandon. That guy has got some demons. I mean, he definitely, I mean, and we see it in the preview for next week. He's battling with, you know, whatever the name is for the prototypical battle that every man that's walked the earth has dealt with, you know, general carnal urge versus fidelity, you know, and et cetera.
But I feel like it's like she's not even trying to tempt him away from his wife. Like, it's so crazy to me that, like, he's battling this demon and there's no pressure on him to fight the battle. Like, you know,
well,
like,
there is. It's the fact that he's married and he's 19. That's why that there's that pressure there. If he wasn't married, then he could just be 19.
But he has no option to be unfaithful. Michaela wants nothing to do with him.
Oh, right. Well, do you remember being 19? Do you remember the hormones that were pumping through your body? Like, every time you saw a girl who, not that you were often seeing women who were lingerie football players, but anyone remotely qualified to be a lingerie football player? I mean, this is what a 19-year-old goes through, except most 19-year-olds aren't married and, you know, in a committed relationship where they may or may not be attempting to redeem themselves from some past transgression or something.
At 19, Chris, I was living in the paternity house at Sigma Nu, so clearly I wasn't going to see any women worth getting my hormones up about.
Yeah, as I recall, Signu was the geek frat.
Am I correct? It was. We were proud of it too. We took Sigma Nerd as a compliment.
Sigma Nerd, yeah. I guess. Yeah. I mean, there's not much you can do with it.
Of course, this is like, you know, 8 to 10 years before, you know, being the nerd or the geek was cool. So we were just ahead of our time, Chris. That's what the problem.
I think it just took you 8 to 10 years to convince yourself that being a geek or a nerd is cool. I don't think being a geek or a nerd is actually cool. It's cool. Finally convinced
yourself.
Get on
yourself. Board, Chris. Get on board.
You've worn yourself down.
Let's move on to... Oh, no. We have to talk about... Christine sees the five or six of them meeting and says, what could they possibly be talking about? Which is just the line of the night. Like,
yeah, it's because it's a genuine line.
What could six people before tribal possibly be talking about?
Oh, I know. That was my note. Is I was like, here's how you, like, apparently this isn't clear to people before they go on this show. So I'm writing this note down. This podcast is now required listening for all future contestants of Survivor. Listen, here's how you know when you're out. when your tribe has 9 people and 6 of them are huddled closely together with, like, periodically somebody peeking their head out and looking around to see who's walking nearby. And then at some point,
dinner. You know, they're trying to figure out what's
exactly
on the menu.
Yeah, we're not working on tonight's menu. I mean, and then the kicker is, I believe it was Michaela who comes over to the group, and one of them literally says, "Michaela, could you just give the 6 of us some privacy? If your group is 2/3, if you've got quorum for the entire tribe there, there's no such thing as privacy anymore, right? I mean, 2/3 of the tribe is private, is present. Like, how much privacy are we looking for here?" And then Edna I guess she's proving herself to Coach in terms of her in terms of her honesty, right? I mean, she gets asked, was it by Christine she gets asked?
Yeah.
What were they talking about over there?
Oh, I think they want Sophia gone. Sophie gone.
Yeah. No, like, Sophie was over there.
She was over there.
Yeah. And did Christine even call her out and be like, "You're gonna have to work on your story"?
Yeah, she's like, "You have to get your story straight, hon."
Well, and then the best part is Edna, I think, then continues, like, feigning confusion.
Yes.
And I'm not even certain that Christine is completely, like, convinced that she's being fed a lie from Edna. Like,
you just don't think she's with it. Christine.
Yeah, Christine just cannot be that with it, because that was the giveaway. Like, you know, doesn't necessarily mean you're going home, but it means you were in the discussion. And, you know, between that time and tribal council, at no point do we see Christine or Stacy, who must be in on whatever Christine knows, we got to figure, right? They're basically in an alliance, even though they didn't vote the same way.
Right.
There's another puzzler. But, like, neither of them went remotely into scramble mode. You know, neither of them seemed remotely concerned about whether or not they might be going home tonight, even though the only people they knew who was getting voted for was who each other was voting for, and that wasn't even the same person. I'm telling you, man, this is last season. They stopped you. They all got masks on or something. This is like Photoshop.
It's the amateur hour.
For video. Because this is... What was this? This is Zapatera. This is Zapatera doing dumb stuff.
Yeah.
And Zapatera was the one that got Russell, and now they've
just,
got Coach,
just
the undesirable.
To throw it at you, what's the proper way to answer Christine's question in that case? Like, what do they say? Like, what's the right response for the game player?
Okay, identify who wasn't there and name one of them, not Christine.
Stacy and Michaela. Like, you just got to say everyone but her.
Actually, and Michaela is the easy sell, because Michaela came over there and then suddenly the group, like, scattered like roaches when the lights come on, you know? So
Coach's line, "I'm going to go stand over here now."
Did he say that?
Yeah.
I didn't catch that. I mean, that's just awful lying. I mean,
we got to move on. We've made promises to be shorter this year, Chris.
That's true.
Promises.
Yeah. I think we can. There's nothing left but tribal here.
Yeah.
I give Albert gets some dap for putting a blanket on the fire.
Mm-hmm. He is solid.
Promptly,
I'm looking forward to more Alberts.
Can he be my? Can I book a trifecta and make him my place?
Oh, who did you have for your?
My win was Papa Bear.
No, that would be the trifecta.
Place
would be all
second.
3.
Right, yeah, I know. Well, an exacta is
exacta.
The top 2.
Yeah, so you got an exacta.
I just went to trifecta because people know the trifecta more than the exacta,
come on.
I think.
You don't think just gamblers are listening to this podcast?
We could go to, like,
all we know
superfecta.
Is gamblers. Chris, all we know is gamblers.
I suppose, yeah. So, yeah, Albert definitely gets dap for his loyalty line there.
It was spot on.
It was exactly. It was spot on. And meanwhile, Christine and Stacy are just like deer in headlights, I guess is the best way to put it.
They don't know how to react. Again, you have
to,
like, seem stable and trustworthy. Like, otherwise, people aren't going to want to keep you around because they're like, this lady's going to go crazy and, like, mess my stuff up. Like, everyone just wants calm and stability, and they are not radiating that in any way.
Yeah, not whatsoever. And they're very, like, highly confrontational. And, I mean, Probst certainly put the spotlight on them with, like, hey, wow, Coach just called you out. And, oh, and doesn't pay any mind to the fact that Coach very clearly stated that he had heard, not that he heard, that they specifically told him, but that he had, like, he had just heard the rumor that they were going to vote for Michaela.
Right. And then Brandon has to go and raise the ante and put his hand up like a numbskull.
That was another dumb move. But, like, where was the follow-up?
Right.
Probst dropped the ball there.
Right.
Probst is usually all over this.
Right.
And not only did he drop the ball, everybody dropped the ball.
Yeah.
Like,
no, you're totally
Brandon
right.
comes
I totally
clean,
missed that.
And it was 100% swept under the rugs. Like, okay, time to vote. What? Hello? Somebody just, we just figured out, like, who the mole is. Do we want to talk about that for a second? Nah, let's just vote.
Speaking of voting, did you see...
By the way, Christine and Stacey, make sure you don't vote for the same person. We don't want any unity.
Jeff Probst made a video of how to vote on Survivor. Did you see this thing?
Is this on his website?
No, it was on EW through Dalton Ross's stuff. And, like he's got some points about how to vote. And, like, one of them's, like, your favorite point would have been know how to spell the name of the person you're voting out. It's, like, simple respect. And, of course, they flash Ralph putting up wrestle.
Right, Krasta.
And there was stuff like, if you're gonna, like, hem and haw at the tribal thing, make sure that, like, you really play it up. And they cut to a clip of Eliza Orleans just going into shutdown mode at the tribal council thing, having no idea.
Oh, she would, like, hands on the temples,
yeah.
Like, what
it was,
do I do,
it was
what
this
do
one,
I do?
Chris. She has this little prayer
thing. She's got the, wow. Was she on her knees?
No, but she's like, she just goes to the little tribal thing and just puts her elbows on it and goes into the prayer stance and just, like, shuts down for a while to try to think
wow.
about it. He's like,
that's
if you're
going
to do it, give us something. And it was really good. It was really good.
That's
like,
good. That's
if
good
you're
stuff.
Gonna if you're gonna go on a rant, make sure it's, like, short and, like, you know, on point. And they cut to one from, like, it was recent. I couldn't remember who it was, but she says, like, I'm voting for this person because payback's a bitch. And, like, Jeff is like, that's how you do it.
Nice. Yeah. Well, this reminds me, by the way, there was one thing that drove me nuts about further nuts about Semhar is that she was like. She felt so like the rug had been pulled out from under her in this
yeah.
vote out. And I was like, it's not like we held a vote of confidence on Semhar and you lost. And it was like, just options are we keep the whole tribe or do we eliminate one and it's Semhar. Like, it was like, we have to vote somebody, like, somebody had to go home at some point here. Like, I love how people don't get that concept. Like, Coach wants to get all bent out of shape because Christine calls him a temporary player. I would have been the first person to stick up my hand and be like, hey, let's all just call a spade. Each one of us views every one of us as a temporary player. Like, nobody here is under the disillusion that 16 people are going to the final tribal council.
There's no chop at the end of this tournament where they can just sort of split
the
money.
Right. Exactly. We're not going to just divvy it up and take home 60 grand a piece.
Let's put a bow on this thing, Chris.
All right. Do you want to talk about the Grantland League?
We can postpone it on a drier week.
Okay. Yeah, we'll save it for a drier week. So then the teaser is for those of you who don't know, Grantland.com has their own has a little
reality fantasy
league that rewards all of the things that are. That make reality TV the guilty pleasure that it is.
Well said.
And it was better said by whoever wrote the first article on Grantland about this league. I was trying to search for the word and it just didn't come to me. Mm. But we encourage you to check out Grantland.com and search for Survivor on their site there, and you'll find a few articles about their scoring system and everything. And so we'll talk about it in a future episode.
Where can they contact us, Chris?
It's still the same old, the old email address, merge@vanbee.net, and
Merge
Podcast
media?
On Twitter. We do. And one of these days when I'm not holed up in my math cave here doing math homework, you know, I'll actually get around to changing those names to reflect our new brand, the Tribal Council.
For my part, it's my responsibility to work on a logo and a jingle for our little podcast, so I got to get on that.
Yeah, and you're like 18 episodes deep. I'm 2.
I didn't know we were keeping score.
Well, it's not tough to keep score.
All right, Chris, thanks. Throwing me
all right,
the bus.
Well, that's, you know, it's more fun if one of us is constantly taking shots at the other, isn't it?
It is. That's okay. What our listeners come for.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you all next week.
Thanks.